friend.
Tonight, if it pleases you, we shall talk on the subject of character. And in some such outline as this. First of all, we will speak of the possibilities of developing and changing a character, and secondly, the rules for developing a character, either in ourselves or others. First rule is, character is in the will, not in the intellect. Secondly, as regards others, look for the best. That is to say, in others. Third rule, look for the worst in ourselves. First of all, the possibility of character. I believe every single person in the world has just a certain amount of energy. And some are much more richly endowed than others with it. If we use an example from physics, we might say that certain people, for example, have what might be called 10 ergs of energy. They have just that much. And then others have 20 and others have 50 ergs of energy. The result is that they're able to go in the direction of goodness, and they're able to go in the direction of evil, too, with much greater rapidity and energy than others. And this energy, as I say, is not the same in every human being. I think that possibly any sinner is capable of being a great saint. And any saint is also capable of being a great sinner. Now let us give an example here of how this energy works. We say, first of all, some have little energy, and they go in the direction, call this goodness. They have 10 units of energy here, and they only go in this much, either toward goodness or toward evil. Others have 20, and they go much more, either in the direction of goodness or the direction of evil. So that a person who has a great tendency toward evil can completely change and become very good, particularly with the grace of God. I believe that Lenin, who did so much to establish communism in Russia, just barely missed by a hair's breadth of becoming a St. Francis of Assisi. If he had only gone in the other direction, the direction of goodness, instead of the direction of revolution and hate, he would have been a great saint. And if St. Francis of Assisi had gone in the opposite direction, as he had gone in the direction of virtue, he would have been a Lenin. The secret, therefore, of character development is the realization of this power that there is in each and every one of us, for good and for evil. The monasteries, the religious houses, the places of asceticism throughout the world have in them actual saints, but potential devils. Any one of those persons, because they have so much character, if they ever let themselves go in the direction of pride, lust, or avarice, would become very vicious. And the penitentiaries are filled with individuals who have this great energy. And if someone could only lay hold of it and make them take the high road instead of the low, they would be our saints and our heroes and our great patriots. Point that I want to make is there's nothing wrong with passion and energy and strength so long as it is properly channeled. Notice that our divine Lord, for example, when he wished to make a great apostle, laid hold of a bigot. Paul was one of the greatest bigots that ever lived. And only he who could ever hate like a Saul could ever love like a Paul. Our blessed Lord never extinguished, for example, the passions of a Magdalene. Only someone who was as vicious and as evil as Magdalene would ever become as virtuous as Magdalene. She has been called the 13th apostle. Her life has been such an inspiration in bringing men to goodness. Now, though some of us do not have as much energy than others, let us not forget that a person with only 10 units of natural energy can surpass a person with 100 units of natural energy if he calls upon God for an added source of energy, which God will give him on certain conditions. Then we can overcome all of the defects of our nature. And that power or energy of God is given freely, gratis. That is why it is called grace. Which brings us now to the rules for character development. One of the first rules of character training is to remember that character is in the will and not in the intellect. The intellect or the brain or the mind is the seat of knowledge. The will is the seat of choices, loves, motives, and responsibilities. Almost all of education today is directed to the communication of knowledge and not to the development of character. It is the mind that is changed, that is trained, rather than the will that is developed. And every decision that we make, every deed that we perform, almost every word that we say, goes into the making of our character, either for good or evil. You remember seeing icicles form, and a drop would fall upon the tiny little icicle and add to its substance and its quantity, and then more drops. And if the drops that fell were pure, the icicle itself would be pure. If the drops that fell were soiled and dirty, the icicle itself would be dirty. And so it is with character. All of our decisions pour down into its making. And if they're good acts, we turn out to be a good character. If they are evil, we turn out to be unhappy and frustrated and full of anxieties and fears. This will of ours is really the only thing in the world that is our own. God can take anything else away from us. He could take away our health, any wealth or possessions that we might have. The one thing that He leaves us, always our own, is our will. And people today really do not want their will. They do not want their freedom. That sounds strange, but it is true. The tendency today is to shift responsibility for decisions onto something else. For example, a boy does something wrong, and they say, well, it's due to grade B milk, insufficient playgrounds, or those naughty ductless glands. Child itself is hardly ever to blame. The present tendency in the world today, actually, is to reduce all responsibility to something which is subhuman. For example, Marx says that we are what we are because of economic conditions. In other words, our free will amounts to naught. Responsibility has been nullified. The Freudian tradition, for example, would say that to a large extent we are not economically determined, but biologically determined. And then it is felt that if we can ever bring to the surface something that is hidden down here, just bring it to the surface, that we will be cured and we'll be good and normal. No, that does not follow. It does no good to analyze the constituency of the water that gets into a sinking ship. You do not explain the oak simply by analyzing the rotten acorn from which it came. The real seat of character is here in the will. And we must not surrender that responsibility to the masses, as Marx would have it, or to any kind of biological determinism. Because if our will is determined by forces outside of ourselves, we no longer will make amendment for our misdeeds. And no character will ever grow without a constant resolution toward amendment. Character, as a matter of fact, is made by very severe discipline. You've seen a sculptor at work on marble, and the sculptor will first of all take a heavy chisel, and then will cut away great, huge chunks of marble. Then, with more delicate blows, he will begin to bring out the image, until finally perhaps all...
Faith is a wellspring of wisdom that flows within our spirit. In this portrait of God's beauty, our faith must be taller...
...to be every now and then repressed. And no one single blow or act will do it. And we have to take this mallet of our will, this chisel of our determination, and we knock off huge, great chunks of selfishness. And then, later on, with more refined detachment, and asceticism of the spirit, we finally come to a point where our character is really revealed and we appear as we ought to be and as God intended us to be. The rule number one, then, is character is in our will. Rule number two, and this applies to character training in others, we must always look for the best that is in others. When people are down because they have sinned, because they have made a mistake, or because life is against them, or because they consider themselves failures, there is nothing that is more important than to give them the helping hand and to be, in their regard, an apostle of encouragement. There is something good in every single person of the world if we would only just lay hold of it. And notice that was what our blessed Lord did when he went to the well, tired and thirsty, one day, and a woman came out at noon to draw water. It was very unusual for a woman to come and draw water at noon. The explanation was she was an evil woman and the other women would not allow her to come with them. Now, what common denominator was there between our divine Lord, who is innocence itself, and this woman who had five husbands and was living with someone who was not her husband? There was only one common denominator that was left. There was only one good thing in that character that our blessed Lord could find. And down he went until finally he found it. And that common denominator was a common love of a drink of cold water. Whenever God wishes to do a favor, he very often asks for one. And he asked her for a drink. And then he led her on from the thirst for natural water to the thirst of her own soul. He looked for what was best in her. When we see others, therefore, who are defeated or cast out by others, give them the helping hand. I remember a couple of years ago, I was in Boston, and I was eating in the dining room of the Hotel Statler. And at noon, I looked up, and I saw two shoeshine boys that were leaning on a great purple curtain that was at the entrance of the dining room. These boys had on dirty t-shirts and crude shoeshine boxes thrown over their backs. Their hands, of course, were black, both with dirt and with shoe polish. And as soon as the head waiter, the Statler, saw them, he says, "Get out of here!" So he chased the boys out. I left the dining room and went out after them. And I engaged them in conversation. And I said to one of them, we will call his name Johnny, though that is not his name. And I said, Johnny, where do you go to school? He said, I go to such and such a school. But he said, I was thrown out of this particular school. And he mentioned the name of some Catholic school he was thrown out of. And I said, why don't you go back? He said, they won't take me back. Well, I said, will you go back if I get you back? He said, you can't get me back. Nobody can get me back. Well, I said, I can get you back. He said, who are you? Well, I said, I won't tell you who I am, but you just tell me the name of the sister and I will write to her and get you back. So I wrote to the good sister and I told her something I believe I mentioned on television some weeks ago about the three boys that were thrown out of schools, Hitler, Mussolini, and Stalin. And I said, nobody knows who were the valedictorians of those particular classes, but who did not know Hitler, Mussolini, and Stalin? And I'm sure that the educators wish that they could take back those boys again. So why not take back Johnny and give him another chance? I see Johnny every now and then. He's a very, very fine young fellow and, well, so very good I will not even talk about it now over the air, except to tell you that in all things, we look for the best that is in other people. Remember when St. Paul went to the hill of the Areopagus in Athens? Here he was to meet the senators of Greece. And on the way up to this hill, everywhere he passed statues of pagan deities. St. Paul knew that he could never win over those senators with the higher life that he was preaching, unless he found some common denominator with them, looked for something that was good in their lives. And when he addressed them, he did not give them an harangue about all of their pagan statues. Rather, he said, gentlemen, I perceive that you are religious. For I saw on the street, your street, a statue to the unknown God, that God whom you know not is the God whom I preach to you. It was the only thing that St. Paul could find, and yet it was all that he needed. And so, in dealing with other characters, find something that is good, like poor street cleaner that died, and everyone abused him. Said he was unfaithful to his wife, and he was an alcoholic, and he was dishonest, and everything else. And one man looking around for a common denominator and for the good things said, I know all of those things, but he said he did sweep clean around the corners. And there must be in every single life some good little detail like that that we can begin with and use it as a stepping stone for character formation. And finally, the last rule. We always look for what is worst in ourselves. We are all failures in one department of life or the other. And how do we know what is worst in ourselves? Well, by looking into our character, into our conscience. We all have one dominant fault. The seven pallbearers of character, or the seven dominant faults, are easy enough to analyze. They are pride, covetousness, lust, anger, envy, gluttony, sloth. Pride, egotism, selfishness, covetousness, desire of possessing that which belongs to others, inordinate love of flesh, lust, anger, hot-headedness, gluttony, overeating, sloth, laziness, and envy, and jealousy. If we would, after an examination of conscience, lay hold of this dominant fault of ours, we could make that the basis of the strongest part of our character. Sometimes the tooth that is filled is the strongest tooth in the head. Being false as power is made perfect in infirmity. Perhaps I can explain that by telling you, some years ago, two boys in Kansas used to run to school every morning. They earned a few extra pennies, it seemed, by lighting the stove. This particular morning, by some mistake or other, gasoline was put into the can instead of kerosene, and the stove exploded, and one of the boys was burned so badly that they were told that he never would walk again. The boy began rubbing his legs, said he would walk again. The doctor said it was impossible. And yet he laid hold of that which was worst in himself, that which even seemed to be impossible, so concentrated upon him, that he perfected himself and he became one of the great milers of America, Glenn Cunningham. And so it is with character. And the good Lord would have us lay hold of what is worst in ourselves. Do not think that people who have virtue and kindness and other great talents for helping other people just came by these things naturally. They had to work at them very hard. You've often heard that Moses was meek. Yes, Scripture says he was the meekest man who ever lived, but Moses was not always meek. As a matter of fact, Moses once killed an Egyptian. And then after he was given the commandments, he came down and found his people adoring a brazen calf, and he smashed the tablets on a stone. He was the first one in the world to break all the commandments at once. Well, Moses, therefore, was a very hot-headed creature. So Moses had to work with his character. And finally he worked on it until he became very meek. Now, the reason I speak about character training is because we're getting into a great world crisis. And it's becoming very serious. And in a crisis, what is going to come out is what is already in us. The woodsmen say that when a log is thrown into a fire, that it reveals all the colors that went into it as a tree. Namely, the purple of the dawn, the red of the sunset, the silver of the moon, the gold of the lightning, the darkness of the storm. And when the log is put into this crisis of fire, all of these colors come out. And so it is with character. All of our choices and decisions that have gone into the making of our personality will come out in a crisis. And a crisis is coming upon us. There is not much peace outside of us, and the only real peace that we can be sure of is the peace that is on the inside. And when we are building our character, we need some model on the outside, someone with justice and mercy and goodness and a spirit of sacrifice will inspire us to tear off these chunks of selfishness that we may be like unto him. For as he said, I have given you an example. May all the American characters begin to emerge now under the grace of God. As we continue to be a great nation, loving one another in a spirit of charity, loving God who made us and blessed us.